and the other was responding to the touch of her hand. An impossible situation. He didn't dare explore his feelings for her when it would all come crashing down the minute she found out the extent of his deceit. Besides, she'd never filed for divorce. Her fingers clutched his hand, and her eyes held a naked appeal for him to make it all better. But he couldn't. Not without destroying his daughter and himself. 20. The Mariner's Compass Quilt reminds me that in murky times, the Amish rely on the word to steer their course. Hannah Schwartz, in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. The desire to be certain burned Hannah's veins. "Could we stop and see my cousin Mary before we go to your aunt's?" she asked as Matt pulled out of the parking lot. Rain drummed against the top of the vehicle and sluiced over the windshield. "Do you think she'll talk to you about such a personal matter?"
"I don't know, but I have to ask. If I know she gave a child up for adoption, I'll know for sure that Reese is lying to me. It will put my mind at rest. And if she knows who has the child, that might lead us to important information. The little girl is on my mother's quilt."
"You're sure about that? The picture isn't that big."
He seemed determined to disbelieve her.
"I'm positive. I'm a quilt expert, remember? I'm just not sure the quilt means anything more than that the killer finally started selling them off."
She didn't want to admit he might be right. Craning her neck, she pointed out an older house in Niceville. "There's her place." Matt parked at the curb, and Hannah got out as soon as the SUV stopped rolling. She dashed through the downpour to the porch. When she knocked, the door opened immediately. Mary's face lit when she saw Hannah.
"I didn't think you'd really come."
She opened the door wide.
"Come in, out of the storm. I just put on a fresh pot of coffee, and I made some peanut butter cookies. They're still warm."
She led them into an immaculate living room, decorated in blue and yellow. The chintz fabric on the sofa and overstuffed chair looked new. Hannah settled onto the sofa.
"I hope you don't mind us barging in without calling first."
"I'm tickled to death to see you. There's no one left on my mom's side of the family. My parents live clear across the country, and I get lonesome for family sometimes."
Her cousin's eager welcome made Hannah want to crawl under the sofa. She should have come sooner. Her gaze lingered on some pictures on the table. Standing beside her mother, Kathy, Mary smiled out from the photo.
"How about that coffee and cookies?" Mary asked.
"I'd love some," Hannah said, even though the thought of more caffeine didn't appeal. Her cousin was so eager to please.
"You need some help?"
"No, you wait here. I'll be back in a flash."
And she was. 2 minutes later, she returned to the room with coffee and cookies on a tray.
"There's creamer in the little pitcher and sugar as well," she said.
Hannah stirred creamer into her coffee and tried to think how she might bring up the subject of children. Maybe just show Mary the picture. She could ask Mary if she had seen the child. She sipped the coffee, then put it down on the table and picked up her handbag.
"I wondered if you might be able to help me."
She pulled out the picture and handed it to Mary. Mary took it and glanced at it. Her smile turned plastic.
"What a cute little girl. Who is she? That's what I'm trying to find out."
She launched into the story of how she came to have the picture. Mary listened intently, but her expression didn't betray what she was thinking.
"I've got to find out if this child is mine," she said. "Do you have any idea who she could be? You said you didn't have children."
Mary handed back the picture.
"Not now. I had a little boy, but he died when he was a week old,"
which explained the sadness in Mary's face when Hannah had first asked. So this little girl might still be Hannah's daughter.
Elation made her voice raise. "Have you ever seen this child?"
Mary shook her head.
"I'm sorry. No. Do you believe Reese? He would have needed help hiding the baby from you and the police."
Had Reese been with her every minute after her tumble down the stairs? She vaguely remembered drifting in and out of consciousness, and he'd been by her bedside every time.
Maybe he had an accomplice. "I'm going to ask him to explain it the next time he calls."
She and Matt finished their visit, then managed to get away from Mary after promising to come back when Hannah could stay longer. You ready to go home? Matt asked.
I want to go see Irene, Hannah said. We've still got enough time.
A frown crouched between his eyes, and she wondered what had made him so quiet and grumpy.
I guess, he said, but let's not stay long. I've got things to do this afternoon.
He hesitated.
Just to warn you, Irene can be a little strange. She's got some mental issues and may seem a bit off now and again.
Hannah nodded. She hadn't seen Irene in over 10 years and had never known the woman well. I might ask her about my mother as well as using the quilts, she said.
Ajax thrust his nose in her hair and she rubbed his muzzle.
I've been wanting to talk to her about the murders, Matt said. She knew all the victims well. I didn't realize that until recently.
Matt parked on the street in front of a 2-story house with a rounded brick turret on the front. Oak trees shaded the quaint house, and hyacinths lined the brick walk to the front door. Hannah's pulse quickened, but she didn't know why. There should be nothing dangerous about talking to Irene. Matt let Ajax out, then went around to Hannah's door, but she'd already exited the vehicle and stood looking at the red front door. Before they reached the door, it swung open, and a smiling Irene knelt to pet Ajax, who had leaped forward to greet her. With a final pat, she stood. Nearing 60, she had only a little gray at the temples of her short, dark hair. She was still slim and attractive in her capris and sleeveless top. She had a greenhouse in the yard, like so many people in the area did.
"What a nice surprise," she said, hugging first Hannah and then Matt. "I didn't even realize you two knew each other."
"We've known each other for over 10 years, Matt said.
Hannah glanced at him, then away.
That was stretching it a little, but maybe only a little.
Come in. I just made chocolate chip cookies, and they're still warm.
Irene led them to the living room and went to the kitchen.
I'll help you, Matt said.
He hurried after her. Hannah heard the low tones of his voice but couldn't make out any of the words. He sounded intense. The exchange wasn't any of her business. Clearly, he wanted to talk to his aunt in private. She glanced around the room. Pictures from years ago covered one wall. She got up and studied them. One in particular caught her attention. Irene, Nora, and Hannah's mother stood with their arms around each other. They all had hair that reached their waists, parted in the middle, and held in place with a headband that encircled their foreheads. They wore caftans. Someone had drawn red horns on Hannah's mother's head. Hannah gulped, then found her voice. It would probably be rude to mention the horns. Maybe a child had gotten hold of the picture.
Why isn't Aunt Nora dressed plain? Was this during her room springa?
Yes, her brief stint with freedom. A flush ran up Irene's neck and cheeks as she and Matt came back. She didn't look at Hannah.
Here we go. Would you like some coffee or maybe milk?
I just had coffee. 2 cups, in fact. A cookie is fine. The day was going to make her gain 5 pounds.
Hannah gestured to the picture.
Where was this taken?
We had a commune out near Sugar Creek.
Irene came to stand beside her. We lived there for about a year. It wasn't a free love kind of place like you hear about. We grew our own vegetables. We're one with nature.
Hannah peered closer.
Is that a peace symbol on the shed in the background?
Yes.
We thought if everyone lived as we did, there would be no war.
Her smile turned sad. We were so young and naive.
Hannah turned to go back to the sofa and caught sight of another photo out of the corner of her eye. The two young people weren't touching in the photo, but Irene was gazing at Hannah's father, Abe, with longing. Hannah said nothing. The last thing she wanted was to embarrass Irene. Hannah selected a cookie and bit into the warm chocolate.
Do you have any of my mother's quilts?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. I have 4 of your grandmother's, though, 1 for each bed, plus an extra. I bought them when your grandmother was still making quilts.
Why do you ask?
Hannah barely remembered her grandparents. They and Luca's parents had died in a buggy accident when she was 5.
I'd love to photograph them for an Amish quilt book I'm working on.
They would be a nice addition.
I read your first one.
Lovely book. I was so proud of you. What a lovely tribute to your father and your mother.
She cast a wary glance at Matt.
Surely he wouldn't have told his aunt not to talk to Hannah about her mother.
Hannah frowned at him, but he smiled in her direction.
"I'm sorry about your cousin and aunt,"
Irene said. "Such a nasty business. Why do people show such prejudice? The Amish are good people. The best. Remember that time someone torched your barn, Hannah?" She didn't care to revisit that memory. Something about Irene's tone seemed flippant, too.
"My rabbits died in the fire," she said. Even now her chest hurt when she remembered it.
"But you forgave the kids who did it."
"Only because Dot made me," she blurted out. "It should have been a clue to her true nature. I'm still angry about it. It was so senseless."
"That's terrible," Matt said. She pressed her lips together.
"About Mo and Aunt Nora. Aunt Nora sent me a picture."
She fumbled in her purse for it. "I realize she's likely not my daughter, but when Nora sent it, she knew it would draw me back here. She suggested later that she shouldn't have sent it, that someone was angry she had." She held the picture out to Irene.
The picture trembled a little in Irene's hand as she looked at it. She handed it back.
"Darling child."
She didn't look at Matt or Hannah.
What was wrong? Hannah couldn't figure out the tense air swirling in the living room.
"Yes, but about Mo and Nora. What could Nora have known that she wasn't supposed to tell anyone? Could it be something she knew about this child that caused her death?"
Irene shrugged. "I don't know, Hannah. Your mother and I went our separate ways long ago, and I rarely talked to Nora once she returned to your community."
Hannah sighed. "I'm more inclined to think Nora's secret might be from long ago. You've known her a long time. My parents, too."
"That's true. I met Abe before. He was baptized Amish."
Irene stood. "I need to throw some clothes in the dryer." The initial welcome had worn off, but Hannah wasn't quite sure why. She stood.
"We'd better go anyway. I need to get to work on a quilt I'm trying to get finished. Could I take a quick look at the quilts? They're in the bedrooms. Help yourself."
Irene walked away quickly. Hannah exchanged glances with Matt.
"Do you know the way?" she asked.
"Sure."
She followed him down the hall, past other pictures from a lost era. She lingered a moment to look. There were so many of her father. She paused to look at one last picture.
"Does Irene have any children? She looks pregnant in this picture."
"No kids. Maybe she just gained some weight."
Hannah didn't argue with him, but Irene looked clearly pregnant. Hannah followed the sound of his voice and found him in the first bedroom. A beautiful quilt in royal blue and black lay on the bed.
"It's gorgeous. The colors will look great in the book. Any others in the closet?"
She went to the closet door and shoved it aside. It held only clothing and boxes.
"The other spare room is across the hall. I'll get the quilt out of there."
Matt stepped across the hall and pushed open the door. He closed it behind him, but not before she caught a glimpse of a crib and a wall covered in pictures. He closed the door too quickly for her to see who was in the pictures. Maybe Irene didn't like people in there. When Matt came out carrying the quilt, she asked him about the room.
"I thought you said she didn't have kids."
"She didn't, but she was a foster mother to many," he said. "She had this set up for when she took in babies."
"Oh, right. That makes sense."
The crib quilt looked a little like the one that had covered the bodies of her family. Same design, but pink instead of black. Maybe Matt hadn't noticed. It didn't matter anyway. This must be a design her grandmother had taught her mother.
"Could I see the pictures? Maybe there are some of my mother."
"There aren't," he said in a clipped voice, "and the master bedroom is here."
Hannah followed him to the last large room, austere, with nothing on the walls and only plain wooden shades on the windows. It could have been a room in her parents' home. The quilt on the bed made the room, though, breathtaking. One of her grandmother's masterpieces, the intricate mariner's compass, radiated in all directions in vivid colors. Another quilt, a pure white one with hummingbird stitches, was on a rack at the foot of the bed. It was equally gorgeous.
"I've never seen this one," she said. It looks like my mother's work. She wasn't the only one to make hummingbird stitches, Irene said from the doorway. She dumped a basket of towels on the bed, then disappeared through the door. What was Irene's problem? Hannah's gaze caught on one last photo by the bed, a smaller one of the same pose with Irene and Hannah's father. I think she never got over my dad, she said. Maybe that's why she never married.
Makes sense.
He took her arm. Let's get out of here. They went to the door just as Irene came back to the room.
Come back and see me sometime,
Irene said, in a voice that suggested the opposite. Matt left the tumbling blocks quilt with Irene before they left. Back outside, Hannah glanced at Matt. She dated my dad. I'm shocked he was interested.
Why?
I always thought my parents had eyes only for each other.
Maybe they did, once they met.
Maybe. Something didn't sit right with her, and she couldn't figure it out. Was it jealousy that had broken up Irene's friendship with Hannah's mother? That could explain why her mother had always grown quiet when Irene's name was mentioned. Shame at stealing away a man Irene loved, maybe? But why would Irene have bought Abe's mother's quilts? Hannah couldn't think of a thing to say on the drive back to the farm. The rain continued to come down in buckets. They slowed to pass a buggy, but she didn't know the occupants, not even the half-drowned children peering out the back. Her gaze lingered on them, taking in their features, searching for auburn hair.
You okay? Matt asked.
Sure. Just disappointed. I'd hoped to find out more today about the girl. Her voice hoarsened on the last word. She'd never even held her, never kissed her downy head, never said goodbye. I wonder if there's a grave back in Wabash.
For your daughter?
Yes. Could you check?
Sure. I'll make a call.
He cleared his throat.
Do you really think she is your daughter, deep down?
I don't know. I've tried not to get my hopes up, but I guess they rose anyway. She looks so much like me. If you could see pictures of me, being here had made her realize how much she missed her childhood, the community, the simple way of life.
I bet you were a beautiful little girl with such bright hair.
What if she went back to the Amish life? The thought hovered in her mind. The thought of being welcomed home made her eyes burn. For 10 long years, she'd moved like a tumbleweed, blown from one town to the next, never staying very long, never believing she belonged, always trying to stay one step ahead of Reese, yet knowing he would find her someday. She longed for the love of her community, the constancy of their love and commitment, their calm certainty about life.
Your wheels are turning. What are you thinking about? Matt asked.
Going home? He'd think she was crazy. Most of the world didn't understand the peace of their faith, didn't understand how putting the focus on God and others made life so much better, so much more meaningful.
Back to Milwaukee?
No. Home. My place with my family. Go back to my roots. My faith.
I can see the draw. Your cousin's family is wonderful. So much love and commitment. It's compelling. But I couldn't give up my computer, TV, my car.
The car would be hard, Hannah admitted.
I don't get it anyway. They pay people to drive them, so it's not like they think cars are evil.
Cars can be a status symbol, and we believe in the common good in not putting one person above the other. And look at our modern world, how people run around with no time to sit and eat meals together as a family. Cars have been largely responsible for the splintering of the family. If an Amish man hires a car, it's for a specific reason, often for a trip for his family or something equally important.
If you say so. But I'm not giving up my SUV.
Matt's grin was cheeky. I'm probably not either. I'm just thinking out loud. Sometimes I wish I could go to sleep and wake up to find all that's happened was only a dream.
Don't we all? Life isn't like that. Good and bad are part of the human existence.
You sound very philosophical.
Matt's grin widened.
I actually think about life now and then. Hannah's cell phone rang. She grabbed her purse and looked at the caller ID and winced. Maggie Baker was her editor. The last thing she needed right now was more pressure, and she didn't want to hear what Maggie might have to say. Whatever it was, it would likely entail more work. She called occasionally with a suggestion to include a certain chapter or to find out about this or that technique. Hannah didn't want to deal with it, so she shut off her phone. Angie came flying out the door when they pulled up to the house. She was on her cell phone and mouthed, "Maggie," at her. It had done no good not to answer the phone. Hannah knew she would hate whatever Maggie was saying. Why had she ever agreed to hire a publicist? She thought of Angie as a close friend, but at times like this, she wished she answered to no one but herself. "What's wrong?" Matt asked. "It's my editor."
"Is that bad?"
"I'm not sure." Hannah got out of the car. Angie hung up and shot her a panicked look. She wants her deadline moved, and the book turned in 2 weeks from today. 2 weeks. I hope you told her it was impossible. Angie saw the stubborn set of her friend's mouth. You did tell her, right, Angie? Angie opened her mouth and shut it again. She shook her head. I couldn't say no. It was too big. Oh, Angie, don't tell me you agreed. There is no way, none. Hannah stopped by the farmhouse and banged her forehead on the siding 3 times. Just shoot me now. Don't stress, Hannah. It will be worth it. She's got a major promotion planned, but the book has to be done in time to launch it for the event. I have to finish the quilt for pictures? Well, yeah, but you can work on it in the evenings. It won't take as long as you think. No, it will take longer than you think. I've made enough quilts to know it always takes more time than you anticipate. I've got at least 100 hours of work left on it. If you work 3 hours every night, that's a month, 30 days, and we've got 2 weeks. Hannah rarely lost her temper, especially with people she loved, but she felt she was in a pressure cooker about to blow its top. You can maybe work every morning and evening. Angie's tentative voice lost steam as she finally got what Hannah was saying. Staring at her friend's pleading face, Hannah's ire faded. I'll try, Angie, but we might not make it. What's the big hurry anyway? There's a big quilt show coming up in New York in 6 months. Maggie got the producer of Good Morning America to agree to have us on the show talking about the book, but we've got to have it releasing that week. Hannah was shaking her head before Angie finished talking. I'm not going on TV again. This morning was too hard. You can handle that, my friend. They'll want you to talk about the quilts. You're the expert, not me. I'm not doing it. I'm sick of publicity. Oh, we'll worry about it when the time comes. Right now, we've got to get the quilt and the book done. Irene says we can have a photographer come over and take pictures of her quilts, too. I saw them. They're gorgeous. Wonderful. Thanks for asking her. Hannah nodded. Maybe it was just as well. Filling her time would keep her from obsessing over the little girl. She couldn't help sneaking one last glimpse of the child's face in the photo in her hand. Her child. She was beginning to believe it. She tucked the picture back into her bag. She looked around for Matt and saw him pushing Naomi and Sharon on the swing under a cloudy sky, though the rain had stopped for now. Watching him with the children, she knew his daughter was a lucky little girl. His entire attention was focused on the kids. Up near the house, she saw a buggy in the drive. Luca and Sarah must have company. She hoped it was no one she knew. All she wanted to do was rush to her room and have a good cry. Now she'd have to paste on a smile, at least for a few minutes. She stopped in the yard and turned toward the barn. Maybe she could hide out there for a little while. "Where are you going?" Angie asked. "I thought I'd check on my old horse." Hannah bolted for the barn. She heard Angie call after her, but she didn't stop. Shoving the barn door aside, she stepped into the cool darkness of the barn. The familiar scent of hay and horse enveloped her in a warm, safe embrace. Lucy nickered, and Hannah ran to her. She should have come to see the animal sooner. How amazing that Lucy remembered her. She stroked the old Appaloosa's soft nose. Lucy had to be 20 by now, but was still working. As a child, Hannah had spent many hours in the hayloft with a book and a secret radio. This was her place, her refuge. She eyed the ladder to the haymow, then gave Lucy one last pat and went to stand at the base of the ladder. Looking up, she realized the top wasn't as high as she remembered. Hannah put her foot on the first rung, then went hand over hand up to the haymow. Stacks of hay bales filled the loft. She balanced across the tops of the bales to the back corner. Once upon a time, she'd had a little nest back here, a cocoon she'd carved for herself from bales of hay. It was probably long gone, but she couldn't help shoving aside a few bales just to see. She wiggled back to where she'd made the opening to her small space. There it was! Hannah couldn't believe it. The rough hay tore at her hair and clothes as she dove into the house she'd built over 20 years ago. The space seemed smaller, but she was an adult now, and time changed her perception. The area measured about 6 by 6 and 5 feet high. She crawled in on her hands and knees and peered out the window into the yard. Dad had put the window in just for her when she was 10. From this perspective, she could see the whole yard, the house, and the greenhouse area. Angie wasn't in the yard anymore. She must have gone inside. Hannah could be alone and enjoy the solitude. Hugging her knees to her chest, she settled back against the hay. A smile tugged at her lips, and the tension eased from her neck and shoulders. She could forget her problems here. Until she heard someone calling her name. She wanted to clap her hands over her ears and refused to respond. Then she recognized Matt's voice. It sounded as if he was in the barn below her. She scrambled from her hidey hole and moved over the uneven bales of hay to the ladder. "I'm up here," she called. When he looked up and their eyes met, an unseen bolt of energy connected them. An invisible umbilical cord tugged her toward him. The last time she'd experienced a connection like that, she'd run away from everything she knew and loved, ending up in a heap at the bottom of the stairs with her baby's blood seeping out of her. 21. The Amish prize objects that are made by hand, well-made items that will last for generations, just as their faith has lasted through the decades. That's why I prize the log cabin quilt so highly. Hannah Schwartz, in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. The sun illuminating Hannah's hair through the windows of the barn made it look like a coil of copper. She had it up again, and if Matt were bold enough, he'd grab the pins and shake it loose just to see it in the sunshine. She'd probably slap him for his trouble. Just for a moment, when their eyes had locked, he could have sworn he saw something in her eyes. Awareness. Need. Something. It was gone too quickly to name it as more than interest. She swayed as though she was dizzy. "You okay?" he called up to her. "I'm fine." Her hand swiped straw off her cheek. "Stand away from the ladder and I'll come down. I have a skirt on." He should be so lucky as to see her legs. He walked over to lean against the door frame, but he had to resist the temptation to peek. She brushed the hay from her clothes, but the yellow stuff sticking from her hair stayed untouched. She probably had no idea how pretty she looked with the hay in her hair and a flush on her cheeks. He was mightily attracted against his own will and annoyed with himself enough to grit his teeth. "You can turn around now," she said. She looked just as prim and proper as her voice, except for the fact that the hay in her hair made her look as if she'd just tumbled in the haymow with someone. Before he could stop himself, his fingers were in her hair, and he was plucking out bits of hay. Thick and lustrous, her hair invited him to plunge his fingers in deeper. He dropped his hands before he could be tempted further. "You in here feeling sorry for yourself?" "Maybe." She bit her lip as though she was sorry she'd said anything. She swayed again as though she'd like to lean against him. It was probably wishful thinking on his part. "Anything I can do to help?" he asked. "Not really. I'm just disappointed. I knew Reese loved to play mind games with me, but I thought maybe this time would be different. I'm no closer to finding out what happened to my daughter than I was when I came last week. Even here, I'm an outsider. I wanted so much for my daughter to be alive. I tried not to count on it. She looked up at him as though he could make her wishes come true. He stilled, his blood, his breath, his entire being. He should tell her. He knew it was the right thing to do, just as if God had whispered it into his heart. He could imagine the joy breaking over her face, could see the shine in her eyes, but once she realized the full story, he'd lose his daughter. He couldn't give up Caitlin, wouldn't give her up. The adoption wouldn't be legal because Hannah had never signed away her rights. Any court would give Caitlin back. "Aren't you going to say anything?" "Some platitude about it being God's will that I'm alone. I've already got that, believe me. I know he's rejected me." He found his voice. "I'm not going to help you have a pity party. You're young and healthy. You can have more children."
"I can't."
She shoved him with the palms of her hands. The trauma made it impossible. "I'm sorry, Hannah." Talk about heaping guilt on his head. He was in possession of the only child she'd ever have. Something told him to trust God with the outcome, but putting such a dangerous thought into action proved too difficult. God still loves you. Your grief is all that's making you hold him at arm's length. It wasn't your fault. Evil will always be around. It had nothing to do with you. Her eyes showed her pain. He cupped her cheek in his palm. "You'll find the right guy, Hannah. Your marriage to Reese was over long ago, the night he threw you down the steps. Get him out of your life, once and for all. You don't have to be alone." She rested her face against his hand in a trusting gesture. "No?" she whispered. He knew he was playing with fire, but his gaze went to her lips. She leaned forward ever so slightly, but the movement entranced him. "This couldn't be love. You didn't fall in love with someone in 2 minutes, but he could imagine what it would be like to gather her close, to inhale the sweet scent of her, to taste her lips. He could see her in his house, could anticipate how exhilarating it would be to come home to her every day. She'd make a wonderful mother. Did he have the right to deny Caitlin such a wonderful mother? He pulled away and looked down into her face. Her long lashes fluttered against her flushed cheeks. The words, "I love you," trembled on his tongue, but it couldn't be true. He was reacting to the physical attraction between them. Besides, once words like that were spoken, there was no going back. A heavy veil fell between them, the weight of it palpable. The weight of the truth, the weight of deception. Dropping his hands from her shoulders, he stepped away. I think I'll get some coffee. If he looked back at her face, he would lose his courage. He nearly ran for the door. A chill filled a vacuum around Hannah that was created by Matt's departure. She wasn't so naive she couldn't recognize how her soul longed for him. He was drawn to her as well. If he hadn't gone, she might have kissed him. In his arms, she'd be wrapped in safety, secure. His wife had been a lucky woman. She clasped her arms around herself. She had no right to even think like this, at least not until she was free of Reese. She sighed like a silly schoolgirl. Don't think about him. He would drive her crazy. The thought of loving someone again scared her to death. But Matt was nothing like Reese. She had to remember most men would never hurt their wives the way he had hurt her. She shut the barn door behind her and headed for the house. The sun had begun to slip down the horizon. 3 cats came running to meet her, and she stooped to pet them. "Where's Spooky?" she asked them. Marmalade meowed as if to tell her all about it, and Hannah smiled. She called to the missing cat, but the black ball of energy didn't appear. He was probably off chasing a chipmunk. Supper was nearly ready when she left the cats and went inside, but she knew better than to offer to help. Matt stood talking to Luca about fishing, and she let her gaze rest on him a moment. It didn't matter if her expression reflected her feelings. He wasn't paying attention.
When she turned away, she found Angie watching her. The amusement in Angie's eyes made Hannah's cheeks burn.
"I think I'll run upstairs and wash up," she muttered.
"I'll come with you." Angie trotted after her. She caught up with Hannah at the top of the steps.
"What's going on with you and Matt?"
"Nothing." Hannah went to their room and began to search for a fresh blouse. Angie jerked a plain white blouse out of her hand.
"Don't wear that."
She began to rummage in the closet. "I'm not stupid. I can see how much you watch him, and he does the same to you." She pulled out a taupe blouse that wrapped and had a V-neck.
"Wear this."
"I can't wear that." Hannah frowned as she held it up. "It won't show your boobs or anything. It will just flatter your shape and your coloring."
"Try it on. You want Matt to notice you, right?"
"Oh, you're blushing. You're not used to going after the man you want, are you?"
Hannah pressed her palms against her hot cheeks. "If he wants me, he can take me the way I am. Besides, I'm still tied to Reese."
"Legally, yes. But you're never going back to an abuser. It doesn't hurt to put a little chocolate on the fruit."
Angie jerked the blouse down over Hannah's head. "Were you in the haymow with him?" She plucked a strand of hay from Hannah's hair.
"I was in the haymow, but not with Matt."
"Too bad."
Angie's grin was sly.
"You're terrible." "Just honest. Has he kissed you yet?"
Hannah ducked her head and didn't answer. She tugged on the blouse and tried to look down to see how it fit. At least it didn't show any cleavage.
"He has kissed you, hasn't he? I bet he's a great kisser."
"No, he hasn't. He's got more integrity than that. I'm still married."
Hannah laughed it off, but her cheeks and neck felt as if they would burn up any minute.
"Okay, okay. Sit down on the stool a minute and let me do something with this mop of yours. You've got hay and chaff all through it."
Hannah sank onto the stool. In minutes, debris littered the floor around her. She reached up and touched her hair.
"I should put it up." "No, you should not. I didn't cut it so you could wind it all up and hide it. You look terrific. Let's go eat."
A model on display couldn't be any more self-conscious. Hannah followed Angie down the stairs.
"Smells like beef and noodles with brown butter," she said.
"It is."
Sarah didn't look at her. "The table is ready for you and the children in the sitting room."
Matt had seen her.
His gaze followed her, and she hoped he didn't think she was trying to attract him. Oh, who was she kidding? Of course he knew. The whole family had to know. The new outfit was as blatant as a neon sign flashing, "Look!" She practically ran from the room. The children had their hands in their laps.
"Naomi, would you like to pray?" Hannah asked in her rusty German.
Naomi nodded, and both little girls clasped their hands and bowed their heads. Hannah listened to the silence and remembered her own family. Luca had asked her not to endear the children to her, but she found it impossible not to talk to them and interact. By the time the meal was over, they were chattering to her as though she was their best friend. They helped her carry the plates back to the kitchen. Luca stopped at the sink and glanced at her.
"It's good you have come back, Anna. If there's anything that belonged to your parents here, feel free to take it."
Hannah wondered if he might know what had happened to the ring.
"Luca, would you happen to know? Hannah, could you hand me those plates?"
Sarah broke in with a desperate edge to her voice. Hannah blinked, but handed over the plates stacked on the table in front of her. Sarah was accepting a favor. As Sarah took the plates, Hannah saw the plea in her eyes.
"Thanks. Matt, I've got some scraps you can feed the dog."
Sarah gave the bag to Matt. Sarah didn't want her to talk to Luca about the ring. Hannah decided to hold her tongue, but only until tomorrow when she could talk to her friend alone. Maybe Sarah would finally tell her what was going on.
"I'm going to go out and feed the cats," Hannah said.
She grabbed the cat food from the back porch and carried it into the yard. Three of the cats came running, but Spooky was still missing. Matt followed her, but he didn't say anything and walked off toward the woods. Did he suspect someone was out there? She hurriedly finished feeding the cats and went back inside.
"Have you seen Spooky?" she asked Angie.
Through the window, the trees drew shadows against the backdrop of night. Her family had already headed to bed.
Not since this morning, Angie said.
Maybe Matt has him. Hannah stepped to the back door and peered out to where he stood, staring off into the woods. His stance conveyed loneliness. Had he been watching for intruders or just craving some alone time? Interacting with the big family could be an intense experience. She couldn't read his expression in the darkness. The backyard swallowed up any hint of illumination from the stars, and there was no moon. She slipped out to join him.
Something wrong?
He asked. Have you seen Spooky?
Like I'd be looking for a cat.
She'd forgotten how much he hated cats.
Maybe he's with Ajax. Where is he?
On the step.
He pointed out the dog, who had pricked his ears at the sound of his name. Ajax rose and stretched, then padded over to nuzzle her hand. Hannah didn't want to admit to her worry, but her mild misgiving ramped up to alarm. He never stays away at mealtime. He loves his food.
Did you try calling him? Maybe he's lost in the woods.
Hannah didn't want to admit something might have eaten him.
I'll go look.
Look, it's a cat. He'll be fine. Don't tell me you're one of those who think cats will climb a tree and then not be able to get down.
He's a good climber. I'll go find him.
Not without me. Reese could be out there. I'll grab a flashlight.
Matt went past her into the house and returned moments later with a flashlight and a kerosene lantern. He gave her the lantern.
You take that, since you know how to work it.
He called his dog to him.
You got anything of Spooky's?
His bed. She took the lantern, then ran to grab the pad from the back porch. Here it is. She handed it to Matt. He held it under Ajax's nose.
Find Spooky Boy.
The dog whined, then put his nose to the ground and began to pull Matt toward the woods. Matt flipped on his flashlight and went with the dog. Hannah followed the wide beam cast by Matt's flashlight. Here, kitty, kitty, she called. Spookman, where are you?
Purr.
She made the purring sound that usually had the cats running to her.
There's a wild patch of catnip over this way, Matt said, pointing to the left.
Ajax is leading that way. Let's see if he's there. He unhooked Ajax's leash, and the dog bounded ahead. Hannah raised the lantern high and let its beam radiate through the trees as they entered the woods. The cool, damp air smelled of moss and dead leaves under the new vegetation. She stumbled over a fallen log and nearly fell. Stopping to catch her breath and her balance, she listened for a plaintive meow, but heard nothing but frogs in the pond and the whirr of mosquitoes dive-bombing for her skin. Matt was a few feet ahead of her, and some whisper of alarm made her hurry to catch up with him. "You see anything?" she asked, when she touched his arm and found it hard and tense. His other hand covered hers.
"Shh. I thought I heard something."
She held her breath, listening to the night sounds of the forest. Then a faint sound reached her ears. A meow. She was sure of it. Ajax leaped from Matt's side, and they heard him rustle through the weeds before the sound of his movement faded away.
"Ajax, come back here,"
Matt called. Hannah ran after the dog. "Maybe he can lead us to Spooky."
"Not if he goes too far, too fast."
Matt caught her arm. "Don't go rushing off. It might be a trap."
"A trap? It's a lost cat."
"Maybe.
Your cats are used to roaming and coming home. So why didn't Spooky?" She tugged on her arm. "Maybe he's hurt."
"Maybe. But it's my job to protect you."
For some reason, the bald words stung. She wanted him to protect her because he cared, but that was stupid. The interlude in the barn this afternoon must have meant nothing to him. She managed to pull her arm free, then move forward, finding her way through the brambles and vines that tried to trip her up. The light from her lantern wavered and bounced, making the twisted branches and low shrubs look menacing. Matt's paranoia was affecting her.
"Spookman," she called again. "Here, kitty, kitty."
The meow came again, an outraged sound that bounced off the trees. He was still some distance from her location, and she couldn't quite tell which direction to head. Matt caught her arm again.
"This way."
He pulled her to the right. A small creek barred their way.
"Careful. The rocks will be slippery."
Hannah stepped out onto a rock. Cold water soaked through her shoes. The rocks almost seemed to roll under her feet, but it was only moss trying to shed her from its surface. Balancing with her outstretched arms, she tottered across the stream and only fell to her knees with a last leap onto the wet bank.
"You okay?"
Matt hauled her up as if she weighed no more than his dog.
"Fine."
She brushed at the wet mud on her skirt. The cry from her cat came again.
"He's over this hill."
"Yeah."
He took her hand and helped her up the slippery hillside. The warm embrace of his hand around hers made it seem they were actually partners, and congenial ones at that. What might their relationship become if they could get past their previous hurts and move on to a new life? She was such a coward. She hadn't even wanted to face the trouble of divorcing Reese. Matt battered through some arching brambles and held them out of the way for her. She stepped into a small clearing with him. Holding her lantern high, she turned in the meadow. Metal caught a beam from the light and bounced it back at her. Eyes glowed through the wire. A cat's eyes. Spooky paced a small cage placed in the center of the clearing. His plaintive cries rose to a crescendo. Ajax circled the cage and whined his sympathy. He pawed at the door. Hannah started forward, but Matt grabbed her arm. He grabbed a stick and prodded the air and ground with it before he approached the cage. Ajax began to bark, obviously thinking it a fine game. Hannah started to follow Matt, but a hand, smelling of onions, clapped over her mouth. An arm came around her waist and pulled her back, dragging her into the bushes. She thrashed against the man and dropped the lantern. She tried to scream, but the animals were making so much ruckus that her muffled screech didn't get past the strong hand. She thought she heard Matt calling her name in the distance. Reaching out, she grabbed at branches, but they were too thin and weak to support her, and she was left with leaves.
"Shh, Hannah. Don't make a fuss."
Reese's lips touched her ear, then traveled down her neck in a trail to her shoulder. She shuddered when she realized who held her, then began to struggle more wildly. If only she could get her teeth into his hand. He dragged her farther away until she could barely hear the bark of the dog in the shrouding trees. He shook her.
"I said, be quiet. I've got a gun, Hannah. Want me to shoot Matt?"
Hot moisture burned her eyes, and she blinked rapidly. She wouldn't give him the satisfaction of seeing her frightened tears.
"Good girl," he crooned. "I've missed you, Hannah. The smell of you, the taste of you."
He nuzzled her neck, and bile rose in her throat at the sensation of his whiskers. A tear escaped and rolled down her cheek. He licked that up, too. Matt called her name from somewhere.
"Sweet Hannah,"
he whispered.
"I know you've missed me. Our little girl misses her mother. We can be a family, my love. The perfect little unit. Just come home with me now. I'm going to take my hand away if you promise not to scream. Do you promise? Remember, if Matt comes running, he's a dead man."
She nodded. If he didn't take his hand off her face soon, she'd faint. He nuzzled her neck again, then raised his hand from her mouth. Before she could react, he flipped her around to face him. He dragged her tightly against him and buried his face in her neck again. She managed to get both palms against his chest and shoved hard enough to gain a few inches.
"Get your hands off me! You're a murderer! You killed my parents, and Mo, and Aunt Nora! I have proof!"
He pinned her arms to her sides.
"What proof?"
His voice went harsh. Now that he was in front of her, hatred swallowed her fear. He was still lying, still manipulating.
"The picture you sent. The little girl is sitting on one of my mother's quilts. That means you had access to them when you got rid of her."
Now that she was in his presence, she knew. Her soul recognized the evil in him.
"No one will believe you. Besides..."
He broke off and shut his mouth.
"Never mind."
"Where is she?"
Hannah demanded. She began to strike at him with her fists, but she was no more effective than a kitten pawing at a tiger. Her hand struck his suspenders.
"Where is my baby girl?"
The words choked off. She could see him smiling in the faint glimmer of light through the trees now that her eyes had adjusted.
"Have you asked Matt about her?"
"What's Matt got to do with this?" Before Reese answered, Matt called Hannah's name again. His voice sounded closer. Reese released her.
"Ask Matt if you can meet his daughter. See what he says."
His hands fell from her body, and he melted into the shadows. Hannah stared into the darkness. Where had he gone so quickly? Matt yelled for her again.
"I'm here,"
she called. He broke through the underbrush and found her.
"What happened?"
He carried the lantern she had dropped. Ajax loped at his feet.
"Reese grabbed me."
Hannah wrapped her arms around herself. The shakes began then, shuddering through her frame. She swiped at the wetness still on her cheek.
"Disgusting."
Matt lifted the light and came to her side.
"You okay?"
"I'm fine."
"Which way did he go?"
I'm not sure."
The darkness and trauma had left her disoriented.
"Don't leave me."
She hurtled into his arms. Before she realized it, she had wrapped her arms around his waist and was nestling against his chest. She fit nicely. His chin just touched the top of her head. She liked the scent of his cologne, something spicy and masculine.
"You're shaking,"
Matt said. He grasped her shoulders and pulled her away.
"Let's get in the house. I want you safe."
He handed her the flashlight and lantern, then returned to fetch Spooky. She shone the way with the flashlight.
Safe.
With him, she was safe. But she thought that once about Reese. She wasn't a good judge of men. They were back at the house none too soon for Hannah. Angie had gone upstairs. Matt pressed her onto the sofa in the sitting room. "You need some water?"
"No, I'm fine."
And she was. In the rays of the sputtering gaslight with home around her and Matt here with her, she knew Reese could never touch her. Matt sat beside her.
"You're pale."
"It's okay. He wanted to scare me."
His arm came around her and pulled her to him.
"What did he say?"
"Nothing, really."
She shuddered. "I told him I knew he'd killed my family. I'm sure the girl is my daughter. The quilt under the child connects him to the murders. Reese had access to the quilts only if he killed my parents."
Matt stilled. "Anything else?"
She wasn't about to tell him that Reese had insinuated Matt might know something. Reese had sensed her feelings for Matt and was trying to destroy them. She leaned her head against his chest and fell silent.
Heaven, the scent of his breath,
the hard muscles of his chest under her palm as it rested against his shirt. This was heaven as she'd never known it. It had been so long since someone looked at her as if she was a real person. Hannah realized this emotion she'd been fighting for days was love. Matt was the kind of man she'd always longed for. Peace and safety settled around her until she realized the position she'd put them both in as she sought comfort. She wasn't divorced.
"Ask him about his daughter."
Why would Reese say that? Was it only to twist her emotions about Matt up in knots? Did he think Matt wouldn't want her to see his daughter? She didn't want to think. She straightened and pulled away from his embrace. He immediately released her. Reese never would have done that. He would have taken it as a personal challenge to force her to yield to him.
"I'm sorry. I'm moving too fast," he whispered. "I care about you, Hannah. I want to see you, to take you to dinner, make you laugh, see your hair on your shoulders in the candlelight, when you're free to do that."
What woman's heart wouldn't be stirred by those poetic words? But maybe he was just practiced at it. Hannah swallowed past the lump in her throat. She should ask him about what Reese had said, but she didn't want to bring strife into the room with him. She wanted to cup his dear face in her hands and kiss him. But the question had to be asked. She had to know what Reese meant.
"Could I meet your daughter?"
Matt went still, and his smile faded.
"Where did that come from?"
"Reese said I should ask you about your daughter."
"What did he mean?" The warmth blinked out of Matt's eyes. He rose from the sofa and turned his back to her.
"Who knows what a madman thinks? We'd better get to bed."
"Could I see a picture of your daughter?"
"I don't have one with me."
He stood and held out his hand. "Let's forget tonight ever happened." Forgetting about it was the last thing she wanted. Was he hiding something? 22. The Amish center diamond quilt is beautiful in its simplicity. It captures in a lovely image the belief that God should always be at the center of all decisions and life choices, that He is supreme. Hannah Schwartz in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. Matt sponged himself off with warm water heated on the wood stove. He towel-dried his hair with a vengeance, then jerked on jeans and sneakers to dash to the outhouse and back. The sun was peeking through the window as he went back to the sitting room and folded his sheets. He hadn't gotten much sleep last night, with a ferocious thunderstorm that had crashed overhead until early this morning. He should have known better than to let himself care. All he had to do was keep his distance and wait for Hannah to leave. But no, he had to go make a fool of himself. He was weak. And even worse, he was a fool. She had the power to rip his world apart. He needed to keep her at arm's length. For all his preaching to Blake about the sanctity of marriage, he had ignored the fact that she was legally bound. Where did the boundaries lie with God? Surely God didn't want her to go back to an abusive man, one who might even be a murderer. Being with her was like peeking into a different world, a place where he might actually find love again, but it couldn't happen, not now. He'd never give up his daughter, and Hannah would never forgive his lies. The rest of the household stirred overhead. Floorboards creaked, and a door scraped open. The steps groaned under someone's weight, then Hannah stepped into view. Dressed in a denim skirt and yellow blouse, she looked as bright as a daffodil. "Sounds like your family is up," he said. "I'd love to make pancakes for them this morning before we go to Aunt Nora's funeral, but they won't accept any favors from me." She wasn't looking at him. He knew he should shove his feet into his shoes and get the heck out of Dodge, but instead he stepped closer to her. "Hey, I'm a mean wielder of the spatula. How about you mix it up before they get down, and I'll do the cooking?" "They won't say a word." Her smile turned hopeful. "You cook?" "You question my culinary ability?" "Of course not. I know you can do anything." She smiled, and a steady faith burned in her eyes. She made him believe he was Superman. How did she do that? He followed her to the kitchen and made coffee while she put on an apron and assembled her ingredients. "I wish they'd let me make them a shoo-fly pie." "Hey, you can make me one." He grinned and pulled up a chair. Hannah began to mix the ingredients in a large yellow glass bowl. His grandmother had an old bowl like that. "I like your family. I used to think the Amish were just a strange sect, almost a cult or something. But they're good, honest Christians. The peace here in their home is almost enough to make me give up my SUV. She smiled and cracked an egg into the batter. "It's good to be back." She wiped her hands on her apron, then untied it. "Your turn." She had him stand up and swathed him in the dark blue apron. "Do I have to wear this? You look more official." She was standing close enough when he turned around that he would only have to bend over slightly to kiss her. Her golden eyes captivated him. The expression in them was as soft as the color. He was too weak to resist, even though he knew the pain was coming. He cupped her face in his palm. "What are we going to do about us?" "Is there an us, Matt?" "I'd love to hear you say my name. Say it again." "Matt," she whispered. "Don't hurt me." "I wouldn't." He wanted to kiss her, but he heard the steps creaking. With reluctance, he turned to the stove and began beating the batter. Stupid, stupid. There was no way to fix this. For a second, he allowed himself to dream of what life might be like if the truth were out in the open, and she forgave him anyway. It couldn't be, though. No mother would forgive what he had done. And there was still her tie to Reese to contend with. She put her hand over his as he whipped the batter. "Not too much," she whispered. "It won't rise." She retreated to a chair at the table. "Good morning," she told her cousin. Luca nodded. "Good morning." He sniffed as the batter touched the hot oil in the skillet. "Pancakes?" "Yep," Matt said. He kept a close eye on the edges of the batter. Luca went to the coffee pot and poured himself a cup. "I am hungry.
The family will be down soon. It is kind of you to feed us all on such a busy morning.
Your cupboard provided the ingredients. I'm just doing the cooking.
Good coffee.
You made it.
Sure did.
He wondered what Luca would do if he said that Hannah had made it.